Welcome to the March episode of OMP Clinical Care Insiders, an original podcast series produced by the American Academy of Orthotists and Prosthetists. I'm Seth O'Brien, Chief Clinical Officer at Wheeler OMP and Chair of the Academy's Scientific Societies Committee. We'd like to thank our episode sponsor, Integrum. Today, we're recording live in Chicago for the 50th Academy Annual Meeting and Scientific Symposium, and I'm joined by Matthew Garibaldi, MSCPO, and Glenn Thompson, MSCPO. They are the co-chairs of the Academy's brand new Bone Anchored Prosthetic Society. Matt is the director of the Orthotic and Prosthetic Centers for the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the University of California, San Francisco, and a member of the Academy's board of directors. And Glenn is a regional business development manager at Integrum, Inc. Welcome to the podcast, Matt and Glenn. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Seth. We're happy to be here. It's really exciting to be in Chicago doing this live. Again, to see your face and hear your voice right next to me is nice.
And good to be here. Thank you, Seth.
Absolutely. So first of all, I'm really curious to know, this is one of those buzz topics when we start talking about osseointegration and implantation and all of those things. How did you two get involved in OI and the bone anchor prosthetics?
Yeah, so my story goes back all the way when I was an undergraduate student at a small school in Iowa. I was doing a material science project on osseointegration and its early iterations out of Australia. That really sparked me to pursue a career in prosthetics, led me to go to Baylor College of Medicine for my master's degree. And during my residency program, I got to see a few patients that were coming to the Center for the Intrepid from Walter Reed, really early U.S. patients. And then I took my first job, really didn't see any osseointegration patients. And then my second job in Colorado, I had the opportunity to work with a team at the University of Colorado with Dr. Stonebeck and Dr. Danielle Melton. I really got a lot of experience. And I would say I really learned a lot from my mentor, Chris Voigt, and how to manage the care for these patients. And it really just grew my passion for these patients and just advocacy for our profession. And fortunately, I'm lucky enough to be here with Matt and start this society and just continue my role with Integrum. I'm building osseointegration in the United States.
So was the osseo actually one of the things that sparked your interest in getting into this field completely?
Oh,
did I get that right?
100%.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, the only reason I'm a prosthetist is because I found that website for the Australian group when I was a sophomore, junior, undergraduate student in Iowa. It's really cool how everything comes full circle, and I'm really excited. I do feel like this is a little bit of my calling, in a sense, to work with osseointegration patients and start the Bone Anchor Prosthetic Society.
That's great. That's great. And Matt, how about you? What was the impetus for the interest within OI and bone anchor prostheses?
Yeah, I was a little bit less directed in my exposure and interest in OI. We have an orthopedic oncologist at UCSF, Dr. Richard O'Donnell, who was good friends with Dr. Rickard Brennemark. And the decision was made to hire Rickard on as a temporary faculty for a couple of years as the OPRA implant system was attempting to be FDA approved. In an attempt to do some preliminary studies on a U.S.-based population of the implant, but also to train our orthopedic surgeons on how to successfully implant the fixture and the osseointegration procedure identified by OPRA. And it's been an incredible whirlwind. UCSF was the first institution in the country to provide the OPRA implant system. And I really have felt quite alone in this process, this clinical process. We haven't had a society of colleagues that I've been able to call on and refer to. So the thought of creating a group within the Academy is very appealing. It's just been wonderful getting to know Glenn over this past couple of months and others as well.
It answers my next question, which was going to be, we are breaking new ground with the Academy today in our first Bone Anchored Prosthetic Society meeting in person as a group. And that's a society that now the 10th scientific society for the Academy. One that I have been extremely interested and passionate about trying to bring to fruition and so excited that it's off the ground and with the two of you at the helm, absolutely excited about that. But why now? What is it that kind of sparked the need and the value for clinicians everywhere to create a society centered around osseointegration?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And obviously, this is not necessarily a new procedure or technique. Started in Sweden in the 90s and then slowly progressed there. And then Australia had their program. And then it got brought to the United States in 2016. But it's nothing new. But I think we are at a point as a profession where it is becoming more common and we're having more patients and more people are getting interested out in the field. And it's just a good time to come together as a profession to say, how do we handle this? How do we set clinical guidelines? How do we set and define our scope of practice when we manage these patients? And how do we elevate our profession to have a seat at the table with surgeons, with PM&R physicians, and just with other allied health professions And I think as a society, we can come together and have a unified stance to present ourselves to do that. And there's really no better place to do that than through the academy, which Matt can discuss.
Yeah, and before I ask you about the specifics of that, I think one of the things that I get asked a lot by clinicians or people outside of the field too is like, oh, this is brand new. This is experimental stuff. And maybe one of the misconceptions, right? This has been going on not only outside of the U.S., but even within the U.S. It's been happening for quite a while. It's just getting the attention, and we're starting to get through some of those barriers of regulation and process, I think. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, like I said, it is super important that we have a unified stance, so it's not a Wild West approach to managing these patients, because ultimately, that's going to hinder our profession more than assist, and we really need to advocate for ourselves as a profession. Maintain our seat at the table with these other healthcare professionals.
Yeah, like Glenn says, it's not a new technology at all. What we needed to know is whether or not the technology was going to be efficacious in a U.S.-based population. And I think we've discovered that there's a place for this technology in our field. And now that we know that, now we have a whole bunch of questions that need answering as to how to integrate the technology more formally and to put some guidelines around it. And so the time is right for this kind of society to have that kind of collaboration and intentional effort to the formalization.
In a number of ways, there is no book to go to yet to find the answers. Perhaps one of the things that the society is going to be able to do is really become the authors of that book in a certain way, or at least contribute to the creation of it in a meaningful manner. What are some of the goals, do you think, within the society for, we're in the beginning of 2024 and really just getting underway, but we have an incredible team of not only orthotists and prosthetists, but researchers and therapists and physicians, surgeons, really across the board. I think it's one of the groups that has maybe the widest roots of any of the societies, and something that we could really create a model for others. Along those lines, what do you think some of the goals are for the society in the years to come?
Yeah, I think that's what Glenn and I need to work with the society members on, is identifying what is the low-hanging fruit? Where do we want to focus our energy? There are so many different topics around this subject that we can focus a lot of energy on. We don't want to take on more than we can handle in the first 12 to 24 months, but we've been able to identify some areas where we want to focus our initial energy, and that is creating clinical practice guidelines with regard to candidacy pathways, fitting guidelines, rehab protocol, and follow-up, a long-term follow-up for these patients. We also want to focus a little bit on defining the multidisciplinary team. I think it's been made fairly clear that is a requirement to have a multidisciplinary group treating these patients. But what does that team look like exactly? How do we define that? Who are those people? Who plays what role? It's not going to be the same everywhere, but there should be some further discussion about that. Scope of practice has come up. What is our scope? Where does our service begin? Where does a surgeon's service end? What is a prosthetist capable of doing? There's some discussion of whether or not a formal osseointegration prosthetic certification is on the table and should be up for consideration. We have discussed registries and outcomes coming out of this society. And then finally, the most obvious is just research in general. We need good long-term data collection to prove efficacy in this population and to understand really how to treat these patients the best we possibly can.
I think around scope of practice, one of the things over the years that I've heard coming from different areas is really all across the board, from don't touch it, absolutely not, to absolutely no fear and dive right in and be embedded in that whole process from start to finish. Maybe one of the other, I would say probably misguided concerns is that this is going to somehow eliminate a need for us. And yes, the socket becomes out of the picture, but I think that it's clear at this point that the prosthetist and the CPO is still a vital part of that team. Would you agree? Is that becoming more and more apparent as we go down this path?
Yeah, I think I've interfaced with a lot of prosthetists surrounding bone anchored patients, and it is really intimidating for most. There's something metal sticking out of a human body. It's definitely a little uncomfortable to see, touch, and be responsible for. And I think that it's getting better as it becomes more common, but there's still just this fundamental uncertainty surrounding these patients. And I think as a society, we can prepare the practitioners who haven't seen these patients yet and who may need to lift up certain patients that are candidates. And we also need to equip those who do have these patients to give them the knowledge and the training to have the right approach clinically and also know what to do with follow-ups. So that's a big complaint in the field right now is how do we follow up with these patients? What are the protocols? So I think as a society, we can help that realm of individuals. And the last thing is provide educational initiatives for people who are just getting into the profession. That way they can have lasting resources for decades to look back on and not be unprepared if someone just shows up to their office one day. So all that to answer your question, that it is getting better, but it's still very much intimidating to most.
And I think, too, there's certainly clinicians out there that are worried about their worth being measured on creating a socket, which, of course, is an absolute critical part of a traditional prosthesis. But I think that anyone who has osseointegration performed still has just as much of a need for prosthetic alignment, biomechanic eyes. They're still going to need componentry and expertise there that is still extremely gratifying for, at least I would say for myself as a prosthetist, it's not a worry that I think people should be afraid of the unknown in that sense of kind of carving ourselves out of the equation.
Yeah, I think we are ultimately defined by our patient outcomes. And I think it's important to remind ourselves that our patient outcomes are not just isolated to our socket comfort scores. There's a lot of ways that we can improve patient outcomes and quality of life that are well outside of socket comfort and making socket.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there was some general concern early on when this implant was FDA approved, and there was quite a bit of buzz in our profession as to whether or not we were going to be devalued in some way in the healthcare continuum. But I argue quite the opposite. I find that I see some of my OI patients more frequently, allowing us to refine their alignment and really optimize, as Glenn says, their outcomes. And I'd also just go a little bit further and say, of the multidisciplinary team, I think the prosthetist is perhaps the most important member of that team in the preliminary sort of decision-making as to whether or not somebody's a candidate, and of course, following the patient for sometimes their entire life through their rehab, depending upon how long they stay with their prosthetist. So there's quite a bit of interaction that will always be the case with OI.
And education being one of the core things that's needed and identified from the society in general, among other sources. But let's dive into the weeds just a little bit in terms of what are some of the basic anatomy of a implanted osseointegration device?
Yeah, so the anatomy of the implant system and all the systems, there are plenty out there, but all of them have an implant. Some called a fixture, some called an implant. So from that implant, that is inside of the bone, and each implant has their own protocols for doing those procedures. Some do it in one stage, some do it in two stages, some do it only in femur, some do it in femurs, tibias, and in URI. I learned that was a word from a surgeon I met with the other day. It's like, how do you say the plural of URI? So I guess it was URI. Nonetheless, I digress. Okay, so from the implant, the fixture is an abutment. So that abutment connects to the fixture and protrudes through the skin, out of the skin penetration site. Some call it a stoma, some call it an aperture. So that abutment, some also refer to it as a dual cone. Some refer to it just as an abutment. So that abutment then has a piece on the outside. Again, some refer to that as the abutment, or some give that a different name. Some call it a tapered sleeve. Some actually call it a male part. That is how they call it. I'm not making that up. Nonetheless, so they have that piece. And that piece has a screw on the outside that connects it all to the implant system. And then that tapered sleeve or the abutment then plugs in, so to speak, to the prosthetic connector. So again, there are plenty out there for the different implant systems. Now, obviously, many of you have heard of the Axor, and that is for the FDA-approved product for the Oprah implant system. There's also connectors called the Lucy connector for the Dutch team, the Hermley connector for the German team, then the OPL system in Australia has the OPL connector. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty more products out on the market, and each is going to have their own name, but that is the general anatomy of the implant system. So that's how we define that. And then we have to get into where do their bounds stop and where does the surgeons begin? And I think that is something that our society and our profession can do a better job of clarifying for our professional level.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break for a word from our episode sponsor, Integrum. Since 1990, Integrum has revolutionized global amputee care with bone-anchored prostheses. Meet the Oprah implant system, a pioneering solution for transfemoral amputees. Oprah's transfemoral implant, Platform G, is the only bone-anchored option approved for use by the FDA for the North American amputee community. Indicated for amputation due to trauma or cancer, and those who are unable to use or having complications with traditional socket prostheses. Transform frustration into liberation with Integrum. Visit integrum.se to learn more. Along the lines of education, one of the things that I'm really curious to hear is I know that there's a number of different events in the works regarding education and furthering the discussion. Matt, can you tell me a little bit about some of the initiatives that are coming from the Boneacre Prosthetic Society?
Absolutely. The first educational offering will be by way of a new conference that the Academy is offering called the Unconference. This is a new educational offering that's been successfully done in other arenas. These unconferences started in the early 2000s. It's a non-traditional conference format that really allows participants to drive the meeting content as they register. So anybody registering for an unconference is also agreeing to be a participant as a speaker, panelist, part of the Q&A. It's a very unique format, but the idea is that the conference is driven in a direction that the participants want to see happen and answering ultimately questions they want to hear answered. It's going to be fantastic. And of course, the first topic that the unconference is going to tackle is Boneacre prosthetics. This is very exciting to be on the forefront. We're starting a society as well as running a conference all at the same time, Glenn and I. And this is a lot to take on. But I think this topic is front and center and relevant, very interesting to many. The four subjects we're in all likelihood going to focus some attention are going to be CPOs, scope of practice, prosthetic fitting recommendations and considerations. We'll talk a little bit about multidisciplinary team approach and have that as part of our discussion. And then surgical considerations are, of course, on a lot of people's minds as well. The conference itself will be late June, but registration will be closing soon. It's open now as of April 26th, registration will close. So please register. A little plug here from the unconference. Please register as quickly as you can, and we hope to see everyone there.
So there's a lot of people that are going to hear unconference and just think, what in the world are you talking about, right? So it was a great job explaining. I think maybe even just to, they always joke about you should write for the eighth grade level, right? So that the average person can understand it. And I fall into that very well. So if I dumb it down for myself, really the bottom line is that the conference is simply people who are interested in this topic that want to participate in the discussion. It is a unstructured meeting of everyone who is interested. Is that right? And so basically, anybody who wants to register and talk about a topic or hear the other topics that are discussed and contribute in some way, there's no committee deciding what's going to be done. It's going to be the attendees that vote on the different presentations that are proposed and ultimately decide what the content's going to be.
That's exactly right. It is going to be a participant-driven subject matter, and you do not have to be a field expert in a specific area. If you have an opinion on osseointegration, you can register and participate. You already don't have to have seen an OI patient necessarily. It's a very open form and very different than a traditional conference setting where usually the folks who are speaking at conferences are subject matter experts, and it allows for the voice of the audience to be heard essentially in this format.
I'm pretty sure that's how I got the podcast, because I was speaking at one too many sessions and they said, oh, come on over here, we got a booth for you where you're better suited, so we're gonna put you over on this side of the doors.
Yeah, and if I can add, it's also not just for Academy members, so it's sponsored by the Academy, but it's open to everybody, so we're hoping to get a good amount of global presence involved as well. While there is only one FDA approved product in the United States, there's several being used here, but there's obviously several being used globally, so it'd be good to have different perspectives so we can learn from those in different countries, help guide the direction for how we handle Boneacre prosthetic care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the best thing about the unconference is going to be it is truly going to have a global reach, right? We have an amazing international participation and collaboration here at the Academy meeting in Chicago where we're recording, you know, live today. But for it to be virtual, be on the web and be a couple of half days where it eliminates some of those barriers of cost and travel and everything else, this is absolutely going to be able to be a truly global event. I'm excited to see it. And then immediately after that, there's going to be another major undertaking by the Academy. And can you clue us in a little bit on that?
Sure. No, absolutely. So the State of the Science Practice Committee is going to be meeting the very next month after the Young Conference, focusing on such topics as research around Boneacre, the certification program, scope of practice, advocacy statements, topics of that nature. Also, care guidelines and practice guidelines will be under consideration as well. It will be really wonderful to see what comes out of that closed-door session, to have an understanding of where perhaps the profession should be moving. And of course, any initiatives derived from the State of the Science Conference would be led by perhaps the Bone Anchored Prosthetic Society moving forward.
I'm stumbled on one thing, though. If we go to a conference, and then we go to the UN conference, and then we go to the State of the Science Conference, how many conferences did we go to? Is it one or is it three?
I would say 2.5.
2.5? Oh, okay. All right. How about recruitment? So if anybody has an interest in osseointegration or bone-anchored prosthetics, is there a pathway for them to get involved? Is there value to them joining? Can other people join the society at this point? What is the need and what is the value there?
Yeah, anybody can join that's an Academy member. Obviously, we really would like people that have a good amount of bone-anchored prosthetic patient experience to join and share their expertise. But it's also open to people who have no prosthetic experience. Like I mentioned, there's those three pillars of what we're trying to do, and it really is all over the map. But I thought it was really cool in our meeting this morning that we had students who are in their master's program all the way up to people involved that have seen dozens of, and it's really all over the map, and it allows this diverse exposure to this concept, which I think is what our profession needs, is we can focus our attention on those who have no experience, like I said, and also focus it on those who have tons of experience, and each individual is getting just as much out of the society.
It's a great opportunity. I'll put the plug in, as of course I'm biased as the chair of the scientific societies. I think that really at the heart of it, what's amazing is that you can have, and I think we had it today, you can have a resident or a student sitting next to arguably the most experienced person within that area of care and learning from each other, contributing together, right? Working towards a specific goal. It is absolutely a wonderful avenue for people who are interested in an area of practice or maybe feel that it's an area that they're lacking in, just as much as it's critical to get people who are the subject matter experts or decades of experience or hundreds of patients of experience. And the wide range of that collaboration, I think, is another incredible dynamic that happens within the societies. For anyone who is interested, you can certainly get more information about the scientific societies. There's 10 of them. And you can find a society that spans every realm of OMP patient care. To get involved, you can visit the communities section of the Academy's website at omp.org. Chicago, any exciting things that you're doing while you're here or anything that you've done so far?
This podcast is the best thing so far, but we have still a few more days here. And I'm sure it's going to be amazing to connect with more individuals and just to discuss the society and the initiatives we have in the future.
What's next from the society front and from Bone Anchor Prosthetics? Obviously, you have a lot on your plate and on the horizon, but what's next immediately? Is it getting members and increasing the collaboration and getting that group off the ground? Or is there something else that is more on the forefront at the moment?
Yeah, I think we're really going to lean on the society for help with the UN conference. Clearly, many of the society members will be participants in that. So we're strongly encouraging everyone to be involved, but of course, the society members as well. I think probably the lowest hanging fruit that we're going to focus some preliminary attention on, and because it really impacts students as well, is clinical guidelines around fitting patients. We've had both Glenn and I, a number of professors approach us at any given time asking, what exactly should I be teaching my students? I'm sending them out into the world to treat patients and they're going to see OI patients. What are some just basic top 10 list guidelines we should be sharing with them? I think from our meeting this morning, that was a great take-home point and probably a very easy deliverable that we could be focusing on in the next month.
Well, if anybody's interested in the UN conference specifically, you can certainly find information about the society on the website. The UN conference as well, registration is open. And I think, I don't remember if you told me, what is the window of registration there for the UN conference?
So registration will close April 26th. Act fast.
April 26th. So if anyone is interested in joining the UN conference and contributing and learning and being a part of that discussion, we are very early on, but there is an amazing group being assembled across multiple disciplines. They can also register for the UN conference on the Academy's website at omp.org. Matt and Glenn, it's awesome to see you. I see the two of you quite often, but it's great to be sitting here at the booth with you, chatting a little bit. Thanks for joining on the podcast, and I can't wait to enjoy the rest of the week here in Chicago.
Awesome. Thanks, Seth.
Yeah, appreciate it. Seth.
My pleasure. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of OMP Clinical Care Insiders. I hope you'll join us each month as we continue our conversation with key voices in the OMP community, discussing their area of clinical care and sharing personal experiences as professionals in that specialty. we'd like to extend a special thank you to our episode sponsor, Integrum. For more information, be sure to visit them online at integrum.se. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And don't forget to check out the Academy's award-winning podcasts for OMP professionals, OMP Research Insights with Dr. Steve Gard, and OMP Rising, a podcast created for emerging professionals in our field. For more information on the American Academy of Orthotists and Prosthetists, visit us online at onp.org. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time. and the post roll. 3, 2, 1. We'd like to extend a special thank you to our episode sponsor, Integrum. For more information, be sure to visit them online at integrum.se. Or one other option. 3, 2, 1. Perfect. Thanks, guys.